And this is 3CR. We're going to move over to our direct cross to the G20 in Brisbane with our
good
colleagues.
Yeah,
g'day, Corey. How are you?
Good, good. I'm surrounded by cops. What about you?
No. I'm in a nice studio, and it's temperature controlled. So, how many cops have you got around you, mate?
Oh, there's usually about 10 circling the park at any one time.
Oh, goodness me. So you've been out to the rallies
and
today?
They've got all different armbands.
So what have you...
I've been out to the rallies today.
Yeah. And the rally, you've taken some material from the environment rally?
That was the one for today? But being Remembrance Day, a lot of people actually also reflected on Indigenous resistance. So that's the audio that you're going to get now. First up, we're going to hear Jambi from the Gitbal Nation.
Okay, go ahead.
Take a moment to pay respects to the Indigenous diggers that have fallen overseas and our Indigenous warriors here at home. We'll just ask for a moment of silence for them. I saw a story the other day on TV about a bloke who got the VC, Victoria Cross medal, for bravery, fighting against the Taliban. And I thought to myself, what honour could we bestow on our warriors here? I think to be recognised through the whole Commonwealth is one thing, and to get a handshake from the Queen. But who here really wants that? There's one thing that bloke, well, I've forgotten his name already. I remember what he did though. Drawing fire on himself to save his mate who was already wounded and unfortunately ended up dying. But his story, no matter how brave, will never be remembered like the stories of our warriors here. They might write it down in some history book and someone might look it up one day in the future. But here, their spirit goes straight into the scene. Stays there. We feel it. Every time we walk across the land that they fought on, every time we walk through that warrior's country, we feel that story. Perhaps we should look up a word for that and start recognising our warriors with that word. Because when we fight, we do it for home. We really do it for our country. We just sure as hell don't do it for the government. We leave a legacy that can't be touched in thousands of years to come. We remember because we still feel it. We still feel their presence and we know what they've done. And we tell the stories. So on this Remembrance Day, we remember those who have fought for our country, here, at home, bled into this soil. And we will always remember them. Thank you.
that was Jambi from the Githbull Nation. And next up, we're going to hear on the same topic from Uncle Barry from Baramba.
Quick, just standing here in front of you guys today. I stand here with my head held high. I stand here with a bit of pride. I stand here with courage. I stand here with strength. It's guys like us that are taking this approach to the rest of the world. I think I'd like to commend the Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy mob for giving us this opportunity. The last 2 days that I've spent here in Brisbane has filled me with that pride, courage and strength to do this, what we're doing today. We could never ask for a better platform. We could never ask for a better time for us to promote what we've been trying to promote for years. I listen with pride to my brother when he's talking about the heroes, our fallen heroes. We're looking at a war memorial, a workers' memorial here. It says an International Day of Remembrance for workers who have died when injured or became ill because of the work that they've done on this site. The courage I have and the spirit I have within inside me is for the fight that we are putting out there for our ancestors that have walked before us. That fight is imperative to all of us because it's up to us to leave those footprints in the sand for our children and the next generation so that they walk this earth with a little bit more peace. They can walk this earth like we are walking here today to show the rest of the world that we have had enough. It's not time for equality. It's not time for us to walk hand in hand. It's time for Aboriginal people to start to take claim of their control. We need to take control of this white system and start to place it back into the hands of our community. And that's what we're here today for. For those people that can't make it, we're standing here, we're walking this walk because of those. And I'd like to thank you all. I'd like to thank the Brisbane Aboriginal Sovereign Embassy for instilling that pride and that courage and that strength in me today. And I'd like to share that pride with all you guys today when we walk the streets to make sure that these guys that are coming here on Friday, the 20th richest countries in this world, are coming here and we're going to tell them that they are rich because of the deaths of our people. Yes. And we are walking and we're taking that pride in their spirits with us today. Thank you.
And that was Uncle Barry Tanner from Baramba. We have a special co-host with us here today. We have Andy Payne, and he does my old show, Paradigm Shift, on 4ZZZ. Welcome, Andy.
Thanks, Corey.
And can you tell us about this interview you helped us with?
We just heard from Jambi before, speaking at the rally. I interviewed him just before in the 3CR bus, talking about the Bentley blockade and the role of Aboriginal people in it. We are live from Musgrave Park in Brisbane, where we're currently at the Decolonisation Before Profit protests across the road from the G20 at the Convention Centre. You're with Andy here, and I'm speaking with Jambi. We're going to talk a bit about the Bentley blockade against coal seam gas. First off, Jambi, can you tell me what's your country? Where are you from?
My country is Girrabool and Narakbul, which is Northern Rivers, New South Wales. Around Mount Warning and around west, around Mount Lindsay, Mount Barney, around that way.
Now, you were involved in the blockade at Bentley, also before that at Doubtful Creek, against coal seam gas exploration. Can you tell me how you got involved in that movement?
My Uncle Harry Boyd had a little bit to do with standing up in the early stages against coal seam gas, and he got involved with Lock the Gate, as well as a couple of other uncles around the place. Reggie King was another one, and it was all about protecting the water for him. And so they got me involved, and sort of went on from there. I ended up then getting a notice from a farmer at Doubtful Creek around that area, saying that he knew where a well was about to be put in a neighbouring property. And we from there went and connected with him, checked it out, and then I went to my elders had them come in and sit, and I had two questions I asked them. One was the obvious: do we want the sort of mining in our country? And I got about a 70-80% vote against. So I said, well, fair enough. That's all I need from that. And I said, well, now I need permission to bring in protesters and hold a proper protest on country. And they agreed. So that was the start of Doubtful Creek from my understanding. And from what I understand, that was the start of the Indigenous standing in the coal seam gas and fracking fight. So we, just went on from there. And on the ground, my role became, as well as some of my my cousins and uncles and aunties, became not just a bloodline connection to country at the blockade itself, but a spiritual base for the movement in that area. So we were doing smoking ceremonies before and after actions, and holding ceremonies for everyone who was going into arrestable positions. In the day, we'd get up before dawn and do smoking ceremonies and recognition of the ancestors and the spirit of the land. So when those people went to lock on, they were in a beautiful, calm space, and they were really, really in tune, and they felt completely supported by the land that they were protecting. And it's such a special thing to be part of doing that. You know, it was amazing. And so that was basically the role. And I guess doing things like welcome the countries whenever we had people come out to talk, and just holding a balance of respect through the whole movement of from the Indigenous side, but also holding respect for everyone who was involved and being able to mediate in that because of that inherent respect. Mm. So that not everyone was going to get along, but everyone could at least understand that we are all connected here. We're all standing on the same ground for the same reason, and respect each other from that point.
Did you feel like Aboriginal people had an important role in that blockade?
Yeah, from my understanding of blockades and protests in this country, unless you have that, then you haven't got the full strength. If you stand up for something without having a spiritual base to it, and recognition of the land and what you're really fighting for, then it's not going to work. And it's something that needs to be done. And it's like I'm obviously not the first one to think of it. Like I watched Uncle Kevin Buzzacott, and how he's held space in the actions that he's been involved in. And I've been over to Broome, and I watched the Rowe family over there and how they stand up. And it was I've had my mentors and but being able to stand with all that learning and my connection to it, my personal connection coming from spirit and from my ancestors, and being able to put that into play, it was just brilliant. I can't see myself doing anything else except what the ancestors told me to do. And yeah, it's all about being clear enough to accept and recognise what they want. And that's what my life's about at the moment. So, I'm just proud to be doing this job.
Did you feel like Lock the Gate and the environmentalists at Bentley and Doubtful Creek went through the right channels and showed the proper respect to the Aboriginal people?
Yeah, I do. And that was instigated early in the police, in the piece. Like I said, with my uncle having having already spoken, doing welcome to country ceremony before meetings and things like that for Lock the Gate in our region, that sort of started the ball rolling as far as bringing in the respect for the people in the country. And it was very easy just to keep it going from there. But, I'm pleased to also have been a part of Lock the Gate in that maybe a go-to person or a mediator between them and Indigenous people as well in different areas where gas mining's coming in, and be able to go and talk from my connection to country so the Indigenous people of that of that area can see my spirit and recognise what I say and know that I'm not bullshitting them, and I'm not here to take anything from them. I'm purely there as care for country and help to smooth any issues between Lock the Gate and them. And because, you know, tall poppy syndrome and all the rest really does work its magic. So if there isn't someone there who's got their eye on the ball and constantly holding space for both sides of any argument or any discussion and making sure that there's respect held all the way through, it can go all sorts of pear shape, and we haven't got time for that anymore. We've got to care for this country now. We've had 240 years of the mess and racism and colonization and Christianity and, you know, all the other things that have helped turn us into, like, well, we look across the road now, we see houses with big friggin' iron bars on the veranda. I mean, that doesn't feel right to me. And over here we're in tents and we're all bumping into each other and doing the dishes and putting up chai tents and things like that. I mean, that's community to me. So yeah, if we had a prime minister whose job it was to mediate between everybody instead of making one party richer, we'd be a hell of a lot better off, aren't we?
So some people in Melbourne might not be aware of the Bentley blockade and what happened there. Can you tell us why the Bentley blockade is so significant? What was the outcome of it?
Well, the Bentley blockade, the significance would have to be the number of people that we had there. And the focus of connecting the country with that many people. And the open heart, the recognition for the spirit of the land, for the people. Yeah, it was just such a great place to be. The outcome, of course, was, well, yeah, it came down to a hard decision by the government and the police force. They were either going to back off or they were going to come in and risk killing at least three people. And that's what ended it. There was that many people there that were staunch and willing to get hurt, if that's what it took, that someone was going to die if it had kept going. And no one wanted that on their hands. The chief of police didn't want that. He knows what the government wanted. But, yeah, so yeah, we ended up having a victory because, plus I do believe that our constant anchoring into spirit, like every morning we had ceremonies. So like most people who know blockade and know that first thing in the morning is your busiest time pretty much, if you haven't been up all night doing something. And so we'd be there where strategically in a in a position where it would instantly be in their way if they did come. And we had the opportunity then to use that time and that connection that we all had together, standing there, for anchoring in the spirit and making ceremony and having a dawn ceremony every day with kookaburras and smoking ceremony and everything. Just, we had farmers who'd turn up religiously, you know, people who never talked to Indigenous people at all were all of a sudden there every morning to connect with the dawn, to connect with sunrise, and before they'd get back to their farms and do whatever, they'd be there. And yeah, it was the same for everybody, every walk of life. There's always remember there was a bloke at Doubtful Creek who used to like doing needlepoint. It's his choice. But like no one else in the place would be doing needlepoint, but he'd sit there and do his needlework and how you going, mate? Yeah, no worries. Everybody. You know, the only deciding factor of whether or not you should be there is, do you care for country? It's the only deciding factor in Australia, in this country. The only reason everybody should give a shit about the place that they're standing on, and everyone should give a shit about the people that they're standing next to. And slowly but surely, I believe that's where we're going, and mining's driving us there. It's given us a reason to stand up, but it's also given us a chance to stand up together.
And there were so many people, like you said, at the Bentley blockade, that in the end, when it came to a showdown between police and the protesters, the state government pulled the plug and took the license away from Metgasco to save its skin and not have controversy there. What do you think, from Bentley, how do you think that experience can help other communities around the country who have coal seam gas in their area and want to do something about it and are trying to resist it? What can they learn from Bentley, and how can the people at Bentley help those other communities?
One thing that I've seen since is in some areas, more conservative people might decide that they, and no judgment on them at all, it's just the way that they've been conditioned, that hippies and blackfellas and whatever, you know, a little bit distasteful or a bit rowdy, or, you know, they might smell a little bit or don't brush their hair. But you're really going to miss out on an opportunity to get a full hit of humanity and humanity's connection to the earth. And that's what Mother Earth needs from us. We all need to have our input into looking after her. And if you don't allow for the ceremonies and you don't hold space for people to connect that have never connected, and you don't let your heart open to the world around you and the people around you, I don't think you've got a chance, really, against any mining, against anything, because it all comes in on the disconnection of people. Like the final cut of mine is disconnection from the country and then pulling the heart and soul out of it. But if you don't take that opportunity, then you're crazy thinking that you're going to stop anything, because it takes a hell of a lot more than one certain people to be able to do this. And if you're doing something that's proper from your heart and what you really feel is right, and you really do care, then you want every possible chance, your best your best weapon put forward. Now our best weapon in this battle is our hearts, because it's one thing that the other side, and in the manner of speaking, is hasn't got. They need to be disconnected from that to do their job. They're fooled into thinking that they are connected to their hearts. They might be thinking that they're doing it for their family, but really they're just being mined and controlled and used as cattle. So, yeah, it's all about having in your heart.
So how can farmers and environmentalists around the country include Aboriginal people in their struggles? What do you think they can do to make a movement that's inclusive?
Open heart and a handshake. Really, that's all it comes down to. Just simple, like, you know, step up with respect. You know, recognize fear for what it is. And you know, there's being aware and there's being fearful. You know, if you really pay attention to what's going on, you'll see that we're all standing here trying to do the same thing. We're all connected to spirit. We're all brothers and sisters. We're all spirit before we're born, before we got skin, before we can see. So just don't be scared of people, but be aware and respectful of what they've been through and where they've come from to be where they are. If they're screaming off their heads, there's a reason for it, and hold space for that. Whether you can aid in some way of helping to heal that or not, fair enough, but at least understand and be respectful of it. It's all basic respect.
What do you think is the importance of this gathering that we're at right now, the decolonisation before profit, with a lot of Indigenous people from around the country? What's the importance of this?
Well, that's another chance to connect. Another chance for more people to come and see what it's like. To talk to different people from different places and have a real good chance of understanding a little bit more about what's going on in this place. And yeah, looking after the mother. I've been to a lot of talks and circles and you know, just talking about all the issues and that, you do get sick of it, but you do see that slowly but surely there's movement, and that you keep it rolling. And the thing that's really important to know is that there's always that unseen party in things. Spirit's got its place. And you never know when spirit's going to wake up the next person or who that next person's going to be. You could be sitting talking to the next, you know, the next great warrior or the next head of the Greens or the, you know, you never know. Someone who's going to end up being like Uncle Kevin Buzzacott, or, you know, you never know. So all we can do is keep going on forward and holding that understanding at the front, knowing that it's not our plan. We're not living our plan. This isn't our thought pattern going and getting laid out here. This is spirit, and we just got to do what we feel is right by her, by spirit, and then we're doing our job. We can pass through this life knowing that we've done the right thing. Even though we've got no idea what the bigger master plan is. And, yeah, the more things like this that come around, the more building and momentum and the strength and connection. Yeah. It's just another step.
There's a lot of different themes of the days here at the gathering. Today's theme of the rally this morning was about protecting country. Why do you think that this is important for the Aboriginal struggle in Australia to protect country and to be part of preserving the environment?
Yeah, everyone knows the legal side of it. It's still our country. It's still Indigenous land. And of course, with bloodline connection to country comes a stronger connection, a more easily tapped connection to the spirit of the land, an easier understanding of it. So that's where it's most important for us. That's why every Indigenous person who's here and has survived colonisation and has an opportunity to stand up needs to stand up, because that's our job. Our ancestors have got us, aligning us up now to do that. Like there's a prophecy about the seventh generation. That's the one that we're in. Our ancestors are from seven generations ago at the start of colonisation and being reborn. We're coming into that age. So if we're feeling a stronger push and a stronger pull to get up, stand up, it's got to be done. So we just do. Why fight it? There's no reason to turn her back on it. I tried that for a little while and it didn't work. Spirit turned my life upside down with a bit of help of myself, of course. But, and now here I am. Extremely proud to have the job that I've got. So, yeah, very important. Our culture and our connection and everything that we are still has a place in this world. It will always have a place in this world because this land will always be here. Yeah, a lot of respect for the crew down in Melbourne. I met a few of you in my travels around the place, and it's always good. I always feel a good connection with the crew from down there. You're a staunch mob, and always know when you're around at blockades. It's good to know you. Much love.
Thanks.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.